Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Guy Davis. Guy is a native of Montgomery, Alabama. He graduated from Auburn University and the Southwest Graduate School of Banking at MSU. With 34 years in banking, Guy has spent his career with large regional banks and community banks. Having worked as a market president for the Montgomery area for BB&T and now as president and CEO for Marion Community Bank, we're excited to have him on the show. In addition to banking, Guy has been married to his wife for 34 years as well and has two children and a soon-to-be six-year-old granddaughter. Guy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Daniel. Glad to be here.
So, Guy, I got to ask. I'm expecting my fifth child right now, but they're all boys. I don't have any girls in my family or in my immediate family. So I have to ask, your six-year-old granddaughter, is she six going on 16 or is she six going on 7?
No, she's six going on 10 or 12 probably. She's got a big personality. You must have a strong wife.
Oh, remarkably
five
strong.
Boys. Wow. You can play with your basketball team.
We play football. We do basketball a little bit, but football. And so we're working towards that, I guess. We've got a few more to go.
Well, that's exciting. When's the baby due?
Any day. And when I say any day, I'm like technically the due date's November 2nd.
Right.
But yeah, any day now. So if I leave randomly in the middle of the podcast, Guy, you know what's going on.
I'll understand.
Well, hey, before we really dig into our topics for the day, I like to ask, how did you get started in the banking sector to begin with? Did you start at BB&T or how did you begin in the financial sector?
So in college, I started out in engineering and decided early on that wasn't a calling for me. Went into business and graduated in finance, and it was 1989. You probably are not old enough to remember, but it was a recession during that time from 89 to 91, 92. Really hard for bankers to get a job. And really didn't know that I wanted to be a banker. I just needed a job. So my wife's best friend's father was the senior credit officer for Regions Bank. And they were a large regional bank, still are a large regional bank here, headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama. And one thing led to another, and hired on as a credit analyst there, and I was off and running.
So you were married for 34 years, and you've been in banking 34 years. So your wife went through the whole process with you then.
That's right. Yeah, we started from scratch together.
Oh, that's perfect. That's awesome. Well, what was it, just for my own curiosity, what was it that drove you out of engineering? Like, what was the final straw that said, you know what, that's it, I'm done, we're switching to something else?
I think it was my third calculus. It was like a physics-based calculus. And I'm good at math, but this class was just ridiculous. And I said, this doesn't really interest me. Went into business and really fell in love with it. Had a great teacher in the financial analysis course that I took. And you may also remember your history. 1987 was a great crash on Wall Street, and that was right in the middle of me taking those classes. So it was an interesting time for sure.
So then, how was getting started? Because you said it's in the midst of the hard time getting started. I know you already had that foot in the door there, but walking into an industry that's, for all intents and purposes, was suffering during that time. Mm-hmm. Like how was it? What was your experience like?
You know, your experience, I think, in any industry is only as good as your boss, you know, your first boss. And thankfully, I had a first boss that was wonderful. He taught me a lot, helped me understand the industry, encouraged my growth and learning. So stayed a couple of years as a credit analyst, moved on to go to another larger regional bank as a commercial loan officer, where I was there probably until the mid to late 90s. Then I moved my family from Huntsville, which I was living in Huntsville at the time, to a little small town in southeast Alabama to go to work for a community bank. So, and I ended up spending about 12 years there. We got acquired, we merged, and then got acquired again. And by that time, I had left and moved to BB&T back into the regional banking sector. Stayed there for about 10 years. And then the head of our banking association, Scott Latham, and I had lunch every quarter or two just to catch up. And I was telling him that I really would like to end my career with a community bank. And lo and behold, a year or two after those conversations, this opportunity popped up. And here I am.
Oh, that's perfect. So really, a lot of your career then has been in the lending side of banking, not so much like the front house and deposit side.
Sure. Yeah, I spent a few years as a branch manager, learned how to run a teller window and open a new account. But I would say the vast majority, either directly as a commercial banker or in credit. I spent a short time in credit, but I figured out in the credit side that I missed the customer interaction too much. So
yeah. So then Marion Bank is $315 million in assets, right? And I believe you have six offices in four different counties in Alabama. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So we were a sleepy little one branch bank in Marion, Alabama, which is a town of about 2,500 in the Black Belt of Alabama, which is kind of the western part of the state. And in 2008, the board decided to branch out and open an office in Dallas County, which is Selma, Alabama. Okay. And then a few years later in 2016, opened a small office in Maplesville, which is not much bigger than Marion if it is. And then a couple more branches in Chilton County where Maplesville is. And then when they decided to hire me, we talked about the growth of the bank. And I said, you know, the vast majority of my career has been in Montgomery. So I think it makes sense for us to open an office here. So we've opened, we opened an office in 16, 18, 20, and 21. So we're kind of done for a little while.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a decent amount of growth in a fairly short amount of time.
It is.
So how was that process then to go? Because up to that point, you had three offices and then you opened three more in just that short period. How was that trajectory? What difficulties did you run in during that process?
Well, when I came to the bank, it was the first time the bank had ever hired someone from outside the bank to be in my role. So it was very, very different for the people that had been here a long time. We spent a lot of time building culture, talking about vision, mission, values. We rebranded. We were Marion Bank and Trust for most of our existence. Okay. We rebranded as Marion Community Bank and just kind of updated things. We had some challenges in our loan portfolio that we've had to work through. We had a large college in Marion, Alabama that closed down right after COVID, and that really presented us with some challenges. Yeah. But we're kind of on the back end of that now, and we're starting to build out the products and services that we need to serve our customers. We're really kind of like two distinct banks. We have the branches in Perry County and Dallas County and Chilton County that are very rural. Their needs are very different, very consumer oriented. And then Montgomery is more probably of a small business type branch where we're going to focus our calling efforts on small to medium sized businesses and the people that own them and the employees that work there. We can't be with one location, pretty modest little location here in Montgomery. We probably can't be a big player in retail banking, but can be in the other counties that we're in. So it's been fun inherited a great team, and then we added to the great team, and really just it's been a lot of fun to do what we've done in the last 3 or 4 years.
So then let me ask for your vision change. You're actually the first person I've talked to that has articulated that you had a vision change from when you came in. Like, what was it that inspired you? Was it your idea to come up with the vision change? What was it that inspired the vision change? And how did you see the bank's vision evolve from where you started to where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. So every business needs to know where they're going. You know, getting in your car and driving down the interstate without a destination doesn't make sense. So our new employees, I explain a vision statement is kind of what we aspire to be or where we aspire to go. For us, it's about unmatched service and innovative solutions. Unmatched service is the first two words in our vision statement, and it says everything you need to, you need to hear. Every banker I know, in community banking at least, says, how do you set yourself apart? And they say, well, good customer service, right? We took it a step further, and we kind of define what that looks like for our employees. And I think that's really helped us drive the vision and the culture of the bank. We didn't really have a well-defined vision when I got here. I think the board had just kind of expanded and done what they had known to do. Our team got together. We wrestled with it for a few weeks, and we landed in a good place. Now, I feel like we're all kind of headed in the right direction. We've made great strides in our service culture, made great strides in our products and services and innovation tools for our customers. Just what a lot of banks would consider the basics, we didn't really have a lot of those. So
yeah,
we're moving through the process still.
So you mentioned that your first change of what you were doing was to really have the relationship development and building of you between the other officers and the bank as a whole, and that the vision change was one of that steps. How long after starting did you really start to see some of that bear fruit? Because I mean, shifting any business, shifting any company takes time. It's a big ship. You turn the rudder, and it takes a while for the ship to turn. How long did it take you to really start seeing this change inside of the bank?
Great question. We do an annual employee engagement survey.
Okay.
And it is our way for our employees to tell us how we're doing in that area. It's what I use to determine how well we're driving culture.
Yeah.
And our first year was the summer of 2020, COVID, in the middle of the COVID pandemic. I was brand new to the bank. They didn't know me. I didn't know them.
Yeah.
And we were pretty mediocre to less than mediocre in our scores, which told me immediately that our folks really didn't know where we were going.
Right.
We took a little bit of a step forward in 2021. I was expecting to take another step forward in 2022, and we went backwards.
Okay.
And so our leadership team met, and you know, we give the employees an opportunity to answer some questions in addition to kind of the multiple choice stuff that they do within the survey. And they gave us some great feedback. And one of the things that they wanted to do was get more communication from me, from their manager, from their regional presidents, from the credit people. So we've implemented a bunch of things that we mm-hmm. think played a big role in those scores going way up in the last test that we did in this past summer, the engagement survey we did. Scores went way up. And so that's what tells me that our vision and our mission and our values are starting to catch on.
So would you be willing to share what was your favorite? You said you implemented a multitude of different things. What was your favorite one that you like? Yeah, like this right here. Like, I like this one. What was that one?
I don't know if I could pick one, but I would say maybe the Promise Award. The Promise for us is an acronym of how we give service. We're personal. We're responsive. We're obsessive. We're motivated, we're informed, we're skilled, and we're excited. So we decided to have a quarterly Promise Award winner. And
I love that.
Award, you can nominate a fellow employee is the way that you get nominated. And then we put all of those folks into a hat and we draw for that at the end of the quarter. And we celebrate someone going above and beyond in that promise to deliver at a very high level.
That's awesome. I really like that. So then Marion Bank is a relatively small community bank on the scale of banking. How do you guys handle things like margin compression and things like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, small or large, I guess some of the large regionals have some sophisticated hedge strategies that they use
yeah.
to help them in this situation.
Their own classes they take and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's really all about blocking and tackling. It's, you know, we went along until last fall. It's almost as if our customers woke up on the same day and said, we want more interest on our deposit accounts.
Okay. Yeah.
And you model your bank based on, you know, the maturities of your loans and maturities of your deposits. And mm-hmm. we had, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 year CDs out there that made us look like, you know, we were pretty well balanced. But in reality, right. someone has a CD paying 0.25 of 1%, the cost to break that CD is almost nothing. And they broke them every day and said, we want to put them in a new CD. And we had to respond quickly. In addition, we had some large municipal customers that pulled money out and put it in treasury ladders. And, you know, that hurt us as well. So thankfully, we had no broker deposits at the time, no borrowings at the time. We were able to withstand the first wave and then have kind of built out a strategy from there. For us, you know, we have 3 branches that are less than 5 years old, and you know, it takes years to build a core deposit base in a branch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's really been our focus. I know every banker says they're building core deposits, but we're
right.
I mean, it's what we wake up to do every day. Lending is sort of what happens, but you can't lend if you don't have the deposit side. And you know, we've been able to raise the rates as loans mature in our loan portfolio, but that takes time. And so this bank had historically lived more funding with CDs than a lot of banks.
Okay.
And so we were already behind the eight ball. And then when the rate shot up, all of those deposits repriced very quickly. And So it probably hurt us more than most. Now we're seeing our margin increase every quarter. Our peer group is kind of coming to us when it comes to cost of funds. For us, it's really just boots on the street. We're going to do a little more branding this year than we've ever done. We've had so many irons in the fire that we really haven't introduced ourselves the way we need to in all of our communities. And I think that will help some, but it's really one-on-one. It's like a one-on-one pickup game. You know, you win one customer at a time, and that's what the challenge for our folks has been.
So really a lot of it is just going to be about having quality staff, quality like front of the house individuals, people that can develop those relationships, can go above and beyond, can really connect and increase the balances in the front of the house. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, and you know, it all kind of starts with understanding what it means to sell. And we recently put all of our frontline officers through a class called Integrity Solutions, or Integrity Selling for Service Professionals.
Yeah.
A company called Integrity Solutions. You may be familiar with them. But they taught a lot of our frontline people that selling is not a four-letter word. It is not something you do to someone. It's something you do with someone. And you're meeting a need and you're uncovering an opportunity. To your point, if I train them the right way, if they feel comfortable and confident in having those conversations with our customers, it'll only result in growth for us on the deposit side, for sure.
Yeah. So then how does the bank respond to not only the margin compression, how do you respond to regulatory pressure? Because I know like the CFPB has just been coming out with some large opinions recently and some larger things that have impacted banks across the board, like junk fees and whatnot. What does your bank do to respond to this?
Well, we're very active in the Alabama Bankers Association. We certainly give money so that they will advocate on our behalf. We're also a member of ICBA. They're a huge advocate for us in Washington, where a lot of this federal stuff is happening. You know, I think back on 34 years of doing this. I mean, we used to do a loan, and it was, you know, a half of a letter size sheet of paper in type that you could read. And it just said, I'm borrowing money and I agree to pay it back. Yeah. Now my note is 6 pages. It's legal. It's small print. And it's all results of regulation. You know, not all regulation is bad. I think some of it can be helpful for the consumer. Frankly, I haven't heard anything come out of the CFPB in the last few years that would be helpful to the consumer or the small business. I guess when you're a politician or you're in a political situation, you don't think about the cost ramifications for a bank our size. The change in Reg B for us to begin to have to collect information on businesses with less than $1 million in revenue, that sounds like a simple rule change that would help keep banks from discriminating, but it is a load of paperwork that we have to put on our people. And it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not a level playing field with credit unions. So there's that dynamic as well. You know, we compete with banks that aren't regulated the way we are, aren't taxed the way we are. And it can present its challenges for sure.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that. And it's interesting to see how the regulations, once they're imposed and put in place, they can impact the small and community banks, I feel, almost more than some of them can handle. I mean, in Texas, I know as a trend, we've seen a fairly decent decrease in the number of local community banks. Is that pretty consistent in Alabama as well?
Oh, absolutely. We have less than 100 banks headquartered in Alabama now. And that number was probably four times that 10 years ago.
So then how can a bank stay ahead of the curve when it comes to these regulatory issues? Because there's always going to be an opportunity to fail, but how can the bank be successful? Because we can't change the fact that it's there. We can't change the rules that come out. They are what they are. I mean, we can do our best to participate in the litigation process, to participate in the lawmaking process and everything like that. But when all is said and done, if the rule's in place, the rule's in place. So how can you stay ahead of that curve?
Yeah, I don't know that we can stay ahead of it, but I tell you, technology is going to help us. Okay. We are in the process of a core conversion. We were with Fiserv, which is the largest core provider, I think, in the country. And we felt like CSI, which is a smaller firm, vastly smaller than Fiserv, kind of was a little more nimble. They were like the community bank of core processors.
Okay. And, I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
And so we're signing up with them. There are a lot of things that we're putting in our new program that will allow us to automate some processes that we haven't been able to automate. And, you know, it takes time and effort to do that. But once you do it, you're kind of there. Automation will be a key talent, making sure that we have the right people that can get a lot of stuff done in a lot of different areas. We have our operations people. You know, it used to be a pretty simple department, you know, and now our operations people are fraud specialists, they're online banking specialists, mobile banking specialists, in addition to handling the day-to-day balancing and operational duties that they have. And you've got to have good people to be able to cover all those bases. I think the employee selection process for us is very, very important. You have to get folks that have a lot of bandwidth and can handle a lot of different things because, you know, just like a lot of banks are making the transition from tellers to universal bankers, we're going through that transition. We're doing it slowly, but as we hire new employees in, we're beginning to teach them all of the branch responsibilities so that if a customer comes in and needs a credit card or a checking account, they can see the same person. Things like that, I think, will help us compete. And then, you know, we've got to serve our communities by being responsive. I tell our folks all the time that the oil that makes the machine work in community banking is being responsive to your customer. We had a situation a few months ago with a customer that had a need, and it was a relatively sizable need, and he needed it within 24 hours, and we got it done. And when we got done, we said, we know that you bank at some other banks and you bank at some regional banks, and we want you to understand what the difference looks like and what we're trying to be. And you know, we have a lifelong customer now. This guy's going to, if we sold, you know, fertilizer, he would buy it from us. And that's where I think we win in the long run. It's still a service business. It's still a person to person. But getting larger is something that you have to do. There are, you know, different thresholds in banking that it makes sense from an efficiency perspective. And we're probably not quite there yet. We've got the infrastructure to handle more than what we're doing now. And we need to grow into that, especially with our new branches in Montgomery and Chilton County.
So really, if I'm understanding you correctly, really it's about making sure that you've got the appropriate processes in place, that you're streamlining those things that can be streamlined and automating the things that can be automated, and then controlling your fees and controlling the technology that you use in order to do as much as you can to be on top of any changes that occur and be nimble and agile with how you adapt to regulatory pressures and regulatory changes. Is that pretty accurate?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I think Review Alliance is one example of that, because we chose to sign up with Review Alliance because they have, you get world-class compliance and regulatory expertise at your fingertips, and it costs you about what it would cost for a good compliance officer. And there's no one compliance officer that could know all that they know. And that's been helpful in some situations where, you know, we've had questions about which way we should go on a certain regulation, and you know, we have that at our fingertips. So.
Well, that's really good to hear that you have that good experience with us. We really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Guy, I did want to ask before we wrap up with everything, if you could give one piece of advice to the banks listening today or the individuals listening today, what piece of advice would you give them? I know we've talked about a lot of different things, but what would you say they should do?
That's a great question. You know, I don't know that I'm wise enough to give advice to anybody. I tend to get advice more during the course of the day than give it.
Fair enough.
You know, what I tell our folks every day is have fun. And we try to find, it's one of our core values, and we try to find ways to have fun. Because if you think about all of the complexity that comes into our industry with regulation and new products and services and AI, it can be overwhelming. We sometimes forget that we're here to serve the customer and we're here to serve each other. And you know, I remind our team all the time, let's find ways to have fun. And that would, you know, life's too short to not enjoy what you're doing. And, and community banking is a worthy cause. For us, it's a calling. We feel like we're here to serve our customers and serve our communities. And we have a commitment to do that at a high level. And we're having fun doing it, too.
I really like that. You're actually the first one to say to have some fun. I really appreciate that. When you can't laugh and joke around a little bit, then you're living life too stressful.
We got the Halloween contest coming up tomorrow.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know what the Montgomery office is doing. They're doing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So that's going to be good. I'm going to play a part. I'm going to judge it. But so far, that's the best one I've heard. And we have fun with it. I mean, and when you build strong teams, it's a whole lot easier to cut up and have fun together.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Guy, thank you very much for joining us for today's episode. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Same here, Daniel. Thank you for having me.
For the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.